Mr.
Hey.
Hoppy, thank you for joining us. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yes, of course, of course, of course. Welcome, everybody. And this is Hernando del Castillo coming to you with one of my comedians that I love from Villain Theater. And we have him join us today just to talk about, you know, anything or everything. And we're here at I'm Just Game. So tell me a little bit about yourself, Aldi, if you want to introduce yourself to all our listeners, just so that everybody can get to know you a little bit.
Sure, thank you. And first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. my name is Aldi. It is a little bit of a wordplay with Aldi, like the supermarket, because I consider myself to be very accessible.
Oh,
just like Aldi. I'm based in Miami, Florida. I was born in Uruguay, South America, but moved here when I was 11. So I've been here ever since. And here's where I founded my comedy and my acting and singing and everything else career. I love the city, and I think Miami is such a vessel for creativity that's overlooked, because we focus on like LA and New York, but Miami has a really, really, really great scene, and I'm super happy to be a part of it. So,
it really is up and I've been really seeing Miami like grow as this city where comedy has flourished now, and for comedy venues, there's stand-up places, there's open mics all over the city, there's different places where you can kind of go and just perform. So that's actually, and then of course Villain, which has been, how long has Villain been around actually?
If we want, Villain Theater has been around 5 years.
5 years, wow. Were you there from the beginning of Villain? Were you like one of the original founders?
No, so I'm not one of the founding fathers, unfortunately. I would love to have that under my belt. I've been with Villain for almost 3 years now, so I joined kind of halfway. Villain kind of started as a collective that used to perform at Gramps, you know, Gramps in Wynwood.
Yes.
And eventually they got their own space, which is Villain Theater now in Little Haiti. But I had been to their shows before I joined the theater. I had been to their shows when they were at Gramps. I had a friend that used to perform at the improv show. So I was familiar with Villain. But to me, comedy and improv, it's because Villain is now doing a lot more stand-up, but it used to be more just improv. And improv was something that was kind of like intimidating to me. So I would go see the shows and I would be like, there's no way I could ever do that on stage. And then, I took a chance, and then here we are doing improv and stand-up. The things I said I couldn't do.
That's awesome. So what, but you do sing, you dance, you do acrobatics. What else do you do?
Acrobatics. acrobatics, maybe in the bedroom.
Oh, okay. Hey, that's where it counts. That's where you should be doing acrobatics.
Exactly. That's where it counts. I do it for free and for my man or men.
Oh, yes. That's what I'm talking about.
No, but I do have a background. Yeah, exactly. I do have a background in musical theater. I actually, before I got into comedy, I've been performing musical theater since I was like 7 years old. It started in South America, in Uruguay, and then when I moved here, that was just kind of made sense to keep doing it here. And so I went to performing arts camps and different workshops and school. I was always in drama, like all 8 years of middle school and high school. That's all I did, drama.
So we can say you were dramatic from birth. We can say
dramatic
that.
As fuck. I came out doing the fucking... the kick dance. I came out like doing splits out of my mom's
vagina. Exactly. You came out just singing like, I'm here.
Literally. I came out belting the ending of Wicked, defying gravity. That was me.
That was you. I can see that. I can see you doing the ending of Wicked, defying gravity. I can totally see that. You're an amazing. Yeah. You're an amazing artist. I saw you perform. Your set is hilarious. When you brought out that your PowerPoints, and I don't want to give too much away, but those PowerPoints are amazing. So guys, if you want to see those PowerPoints, please come and see LD perform at the Villain Theater for sure. But those PowerPoints, they had me rolling in my seat. I couldn't even. But I don't want to give too much away because I don't want to say too much about it. But I want people to come and see your set because it's really hilarious. And yeah, I guess you're famous for your PowerPoints up in Villain. So they told me like, he does PowerPoints.
Actually, I've only done that like 3 times, but like you do something once and it's memorable enough, mm-hmm. people are gonna think you do it all the time.
Yeah.
But honestly, I was just have that night. I just I wanted to have. Did you see the grinder one or the relationship survey one?
That relationship survey one was the one that I saw.
That one, yeah. That one I did twice because sometimes I like to throw in a little bit of multimedia, you know, to make it different.
Yeah.
Especially if you're headlining or featuring in a show.
Of course.
Like, you know, a lot of people do musical, you know, like I can't play piano, but I would be up on that bitch. If I could play, like, I would not shut up. I would just sing my set.
You'd be up there doing whole sets of piano. Like, you guys,
exactly.
The comedian would not come up because I will be here for the next 2 hours playing this piano.
I would play while the comedians are doing their set. I would play under them.
By the way, I perform at Villain. This is so random, but who decorated that mic stand with those flowers? Whose idea is that?
Oh, the infamous mic stand. Oh. To be honest with you, that was my idea. No, just kidding, it wasn't. That mic stand has been like that since I got to Villain. Like, I don't remember that mic stand not being like that. It's kind of like, and everyone makes a comment of it. People either love it or hate it. And it's funny that you hate it because usually it's the straight comedians. Like, the straight guys are like, oh, what is this gay shit? You know?
I hate that mic stand. I don't know why I hate it so much. I feel like.
That is so funny.
I'm used to like performing with that black, like, mic stand, and anything black in my hand, I'm in love with. So like when I see,
yes,
that's what I do. That's how I do my acrobatics
with anything black in your hand.
Like, I actually, part of my set is like me like playing with the mic, and I'm like, anything this big, you know, you gotta play with. So that's kind of,
well, you got a lot to play with the flowers.
Exactly. Yes. So, but I really, like, when I saw it, I just, like, so you don't even know where it comes from. It's just always been there with all the flowers.
Yeah, I think they just, because Villain is obviously a very queer forward and just abstract place. And I honestly think that mic stand is just a representation of that. You know, we're flashy, sometimes tacky, flamboyant. And that's the mic stand, you know? And I just kind of love seeing, like, the very hetero, like, comics come through and have to perform with it. But at the same time, like, we have gay flags in the green room. We have a trans flag. We have a non-binary flag. So you know what you're walking into, you know? So the mic stand should be the kind of, like, oh, it makes sense, you know? Like, of course this place would have a flowery mic stand.
Exactly. No, the green room is amazing. I like what's taking pictures. Oprah's on the walls. And I'm just.
We got Oprah,
okay.
Malala, Megan Thee Stallion.
Do you have Nina Simone? I think I saw Nina Simone.
We don't. We actually have a list of posters of women that we need to get, and Nina Simone is in that. Yeah. We literally have an entire list. There's so many women that we need to put on.
I'm gonna get that Nina Simone poster, and I'm gonna give it to the Villain because Nina Simone is one of my inspirations.
Please,
she is amazing to me. Like, she's such a powerful representation of a woman, just like doing her own thing. So, and the funny thing is, I first heard her in this movie called Point of No Return. With the girl from Single White Female. I don't remember. She was she got inducted into being a spy, killing people, and she loved Nina Simone. So I was in a very like dark, very emo like part of my life, and I was just like, those songs would literally hit me when I will hear Nina Simone, and it just felt like, okay, this is how I feel. Those moments that she
thinks about,
I feel that song in my soul. So Nina Simone, I'm gonna get that poster, and we definitely need to put her up in that green room because she's
really
amazing. So what about?
Yes.
So I always have a word of the day because I like to like just interject, you know, all my podcasts with like a word of the day. So I've ever since lately, I've actually had dinner with the other day, and people just love to go on Google and they like try to prescribe themselves how they're feeling or their sickness, especially this day and age with COVID. Mind you, if you go to Google right now and you like put any symptoms, it's just going to say you have COVID. It really is just going to say COVID. Yeah. So it's like, I don't even know where people even go. So I called it the other day. I'm like, dude, like you got Google-ited. You're getting Google. You have Google-ited. Stop going on Google. You're not a doctor.
Google-itis.
So you have Google-itis. You have that sickness. It's called Google-itis. Stop Googling stuff and giving yourself like cancer. Or, you know, and before back in the days, it was like AIDS. Everything was AIDS. Like, you'd had anything, it was AIDS. Now it's like, yeah, everything was AIDS. I'm like, I got AIDS. Now it's like COVID. Everything's COVID. So that's my word of the day. Please, people, do not get Google-itis these days. Not everything.
I think I have that, but like, but about other people, like, I don't Google my things, but like, let's say my mom's like, oh, I have a headache and like, I feel pressure on my face. So I'll Google like headache, pressure in your face. I'm like, oh my God, mom, you have 2 weeks to live. Like, please don't leave me. I don't care too much about me. Like, if I get whatever, I get whatever. Like, okay, it is what it is. But I don't want people around me.
I was doing Google items with other people's symptoms. That's what you're doing.
Exactly. I'm like morbid like that. I'm like, oh my God, like my friend just said she had a pain in her arm. That's like a sign of a stroke. Like, you're having a stroke, bitch. Like, let's get you to the ER. She'll go to the ER for a stroke, but they'll be like, it's COVID.
You're killing everyone these days with your Google-itis. You just murder them. You're like, you're getting a stroke. You're dying.
Literally. I think my energy is going to end up killing everyone around me.
So that's my word of the day. Guys, please do not go around Googling stuff. You're not a doctor. If you feel any symptoms, PSA announcement, go to the doctor, actually, and let them tell you what's wrong. That's what I tell my friends.
Or just come see me. I'll diagnose.
Oh, yeah. Or come see. No, I will not come see Aldi because Aldi will kill you in about 2 weeks.
But it'll be a good time. I'll kill you, but it'll be a good
time. Exactly. You have two good weeks with Aldi before you die. That's what's gonna happen.
Exactly. Exactly. We'll make the most of them.
Exactly. So you're Uruguay, right? Your both parents are from Uruguay?
Yeah. They're both Uruguayan. My dad has Italian background. His dad and the entire side of dad's family is from Italy. But yeah, mostly Uruguayan.
Okay, cool. And what about what's I don't know anything, any like gay Uruguay. What is that? How do you call people from Uruguay? Uruguayan?
Uruguayans.
Uruguayans. I need to say that. That's a mouthful.
So, you know, it is. I'm a mouthful, I'm a handful,
So, Uruguayan, gay, man, how do you, these days everybody's been like using pronouns. What are your pronouns? Because I like to like...
Just he and him.
He and him.
Keep it simple. Okay, yeah. What are yours? I don't think I ever asked you either.
I think it's he and him. I was like, I think that's me. He and him. I never seen myself. Yeah. I think it's he and him. That's like the other day I had to like really think about it. Like, you know, what are the pronouns that I should, should they use like, you know, more than he and him for me? And I'm like, no, that's pretty much what you should like address me, he, him.
A lot of people, yeah, I think it's definitely one of those things that like, if it works for you, then I'll respect it and like, you know, follow whatever you tell me. I do have to get better at asking first though, because I never ask unless people tell me.
Me neither.
And I think we should all just get in the habit of like, hey, or, you know, some people have it on their Instagram, like checking that or something.
It's this day and age we have. I'm a child of the 90s, so I came out like I came out of the closet like in 2000. But I was like, I know I've been gay since I was 5, but the closet outness was when I was 18, 19. So we never had this idea that there could be more than just gay and straight, you know?
Wait, you were 18 in 2000?
I was 18 in 2000. I graduated class of 99. So I was 19 in 2000.
Wow. I graduated class of 2010. Holy shit.
How do you just call me old without calling me old?
Tell me you're old. Tell me you're old without telling me.
Exactly. How do you just told me I was old as shit without telling me that you're old as shit?
That's crazy. I always thought you were like, you know, younger.
Hey, that's a compliment. People always think I'm like 30 something.
Yeah.
They always think I'm like 30, maybe 30. I don't want to say as young as 32, but they're like always like, you're 34, 35.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. That's literally what I thought.
Nah, I'm 40. I just turned 40 in March. It's crazy.
Good for you.
It's crazy.
Happy birthday.
It's crazy. I'm a 40-year-old. I'm like those old guys to me at the club. When I'm like,
oh my God.
And I'm like, ew, you're old, gross.
No way.
I'm that old man now. No, I don't. I really don't. I'm honestly not into younger. I'm not saying I'm not in. When I say younger guys, I mean I won't date 20-year-olds. I just won't.
Right, yeah. Like actual young.
Yeah, like young, like my friend, like two of my friends that are like 45 and one of them is 50 are actually dating 20-year-olds. Like dating. Like they're in a relationship and I'm like, what the hell do you guys have anything to talk about? There's nothing.
I was literally going to say, like, what do you have in common with a 20-year-old?
Nothing. I have nothing in common with a 20-year-old. Yeah. We are completely in two different stages and places in our lives. I could never. It's like my niece is 21. How am I going to... When I look at 20-year-olds, I'm like, you're like my niece's age. Like, ew.
Wait, no. Let me ask you a question. So you won't date them, but would you hook up with one? Like,
I will.
Okay.
I totally will. I'll totally hook up with a 20-year-old.
Gotcha.
Wait, no, 21. Not 20. I fucked up with 20.
Such a big difference.
I can't hook. As long as you're 18 and over, I'll hook up with you. I won't date you. I won't.
Right. Hook up, yeah. I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm like, this is purely sexual. We're just hooking up. It's not like I'm trying to get...
Exactly.
I know this is not going... And the funny thing is that 20-year-olds do come up to me. And I'm just, what's going on? Like, what am I? Do I have daddy face now? Is that like, now I'm a daddy? I'm like, dude.
I know. A lot of young guys, like, and I've been called a daddy, and I just turned 30. I'm like, slow the fuck down.
You're not daddy at all. Like,
I was like, slow down. Like, exactly. I'm not a father.
Exactly. I'm not your father, by the way. I don't want to be your father. You have a father. Go deal with your daddy issues with your actual dad.
Exactly.
But yeah. Period. So I turned 40. It was interesting, and I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about like the gay queer lifestyle, Miami? Where do you feel about? Where do you feel we're at in? I'm not talking about Fort Lauderdale. But Fort Lauderdale's gay, and so they're have their own. Like, I mean, literally, Wilton Manors is like gay city for like us.
Exactly.
What about Miami? How do you feel? Where we're at in like, do we have our own place in Miami that we can say is gay? Because I don't feel we have that in Miami.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because people always talk about South Beach and like, but there's nothing for us there, in my opinion. Like, Twist is outdated as fuck.
Exactly.
I hate Twist. And I'll go on the record saying this, like, fuck Twist. like White Wings. Like...
I don't go to Twist that often anymore because there's like Twist used to be fun when it used to be seedy at like 3 a.m. and now it's like I was like full of lights and like this, and I'm like no, that's not the Twist I like. The Twist I like is the in the dance floor dark Twist where you go in there and you don't know what's gonna happen, but something.
Oh yeah, you get like a a dick poking you in the face.
That's the twist I know. That's the back end, back twist, 10, 15 years ago twist. Now this twist is like South Beach twist, and I'm like, nah, I'm not about
bitch,
this twist.
You like twists when fucking Versace used to go to
jail. Yeah, that's when I liked it. I ended up, I would go to twist at like 4 in the morning just to hook up. Because I knew that's where you I literally would go to twist 4 in the morning, be there an hour, take some shots, and then leave twist because everybody was outside of twist at 5 o'clock in the morning. Everyone.
Wow.
Trying to hook up. I will hook up outside of twist quicker than I was in the club.
Wow. Because everyone's just like, the end of the night, they're just kind of like wanting to get it.
Yeah, everybody's just like, okay, well, this is what we clearly came here for a reason. So let's get this popping because it's already 5 and we need to. And I start drinking again at 7 a.m. and I need to get some sex in between my party and my drink on vacation. And I had such great times in hotel rooms and jacuzzis. Like when I was younger, it was awesome twist at 5 o'clock in the. But this twist, I'm like, and I don't feel like you're nothing in South Beach for gay people. Like the only thing is
there's nothing. Yeah.
Like, and I think Palace has become like this whole all around like gay, like straight place where people go to see drag queens. That's what
exactly.
Palace is. It's not like gay where you can meet. And honestly. No.
It's been gentrified by straight people.
Yeah, it's so gentrified. So I don't feel like we have a place in Miami like Wilton Manors has, like Fort Lauderdale has a place for gay people. So I feel like maybe Wynwood was trying to be because it's very open to everything, but it's not really. Like you said, even like Villain started in Wynwood and now it's open to like, you know, a more queer, open, friendly environment for gay people, but that's kind of like the closest I think Miami comes to something that's close to having gay features. But I don't know, you tell me, what do you think?
Well, I think like, and I grew up in Fort Lauderdale. When we moved here, we moved to Plantation, Florida, which is like
Plantation.
Far away from Miami. Plantation.
Like white people, central.
Plantation.
Plantation. And so I grew up there, and then my teenage years, and like my years where I was like trying to go out and like, you know, like find myself, I did it all in Wilton. I went out in Wilton, Fort Lauderdale, like. That was my scene, you know, so I already grew into that scene. I knew nothing of Miami. And I used to think like Miami probably like when I was younger, I was like, oh, Miami must have like an even gayer, bigger, gayer scene. And then I found out I was wrong. I was like, no, this is. And now living in Miami and working in Miami and performing in Miami, I have to tell you, like, I prefer the scene in Fort Lauderdale. And it's not perfect. Like, there's still a lot of very problematic and, you know, misogynistic, racist. It's still a very, Fort Lauderdale is very white-centric. But at the same time, like, I've met people in Fort Lauderdale that are some of the best people I've ever met. And in the queer community, you know, you just have to find them. They're like diamonds in the rough, you know, or whatever they say. Like, whatever
Diamond in the rough. You have to find Hispanic diamond in the rough in Fort Lauderdale. Because, like you said, I feel like it is very white-centric. It's just full. I'm starting to move to Fort Lauderdale, and I'm like, I'm never going to be a Fort Lauderdale queen. I'm just letting you guys know that I'm never moving to Fort Lauderdale, and I'm not going to wear cargo shorts, and I'm not going to buy Crocs. I'm just letting you know that's going to be me. And like, because that's what you see in Wilton Manors. Cargo shorts,
it is.
Crocs, and I am like,
that's true, yeah.
So you guys can
keep. At the same time, like, I don't, Miami is like so shallow to me. Like, the gay people that I've met in Miami, you know, all those, and again, I'll probably piss some people off. But I used to be very close with some of like the drag queen circle in Miami, like the younger drag queens. Mm-hmm. And it's just a lot of like bitterness and competition and jealousy and like who's better than who and who drives what car and who works here, who knows, you know, who has connections to get into this club. And that's Miami to me, you know, like if it wasn't for Villain, I probably wouldn't go out in Miami. I don't have a reason to. I have all my friends that when I grew up were from Fort Lauderdale. Villain is my first like introduction into like the Miami scene of going out and going to Wynwood. And I love Wynwood. Wynwood is cool. As shitty as it's become and gentrified, there's still some cool spots like Gramps. Gramps is a gem in Miami. Like, I think Gramps is one of the best queer friendly places, but it's also one of the only, you know?
Yeah, there used to be a little bit more. There was this place called Electric Pickle that I used to go to. The Electric Pickle that was super open. That is where I saw Frida perform for the first time. Peanut, you know, Frida, the one that did Peanut with RuPaul.
Yes.
Okay, so Frida performed there, and I just thought that Electric Pickle was really like the scene there in that venue. There was a lot of like, it was more queer than a lot of other places. But I think just a lot of things have moved. Like, a lot of gay places. Back in the day, I gotta say, the South Beach was more gay when Score was there, when Laundry Bar was there, when there was, you know.
Back in the day.
I can't believe I am able to say this.
Yeah.
I cannot
tell me about the old times.
Exactly. Tell me about when Score was open and there was no Chelatino. Tell me about it. How do you do it?
Did you go to Discoteca too?
I went to Discoteca. I mean, yes, you see, like, there were places like that. Discoteca, Laundry Bar, Score, Fort Lauderdale is where I shine. There was this club called Coliseum when I was coming out of the closet, and it was just like it was like queer as folk when he walked into that club with the drag queens and the people dancing on, and that is what Coliseum was to me. I went into Coliseum and I said, this is where I want to live the rest of my life. I want to be
nice here.
Because it was an amazing experience to feel so free as a gay man, to be like, and I wasn't even out when I first went, because I was bisexual when I first started. I was bi. I didn't know. I was like, no, I'm bi.
Wow, girl, she was a bi girl.
Okay, I was gay. And my friend's like, yeah, girl, I'm sure you're bi. You're bi. By the way, you're gay. That's what I used to
say. I was bi too for a minute. I was like, I said I was bi.
Tell me about how was it for you coming out in a Latino community, Uruguayan, with your family? Tell me how was that like for you?
So, just really quick background on Uruguay. Uruguay is one of the most like progressive and liberal countries in Latin America. We were the first country to legalize abortion, legalize weed for recreational use, legalize gay marriage. There's currently a trans law, a law protecting trans people in Uruguay.
That is amazing.
So it's super liberal. So coming from that place, like, it wasn't as toxic or as hard as, like, you know, some other cultures or countries might experience. To me, it was just kind of like, I came out when I was 16 to my parents, and they were both, they were both honestly like, okay, like, cool. Their biggest thing was they just didn't want me to go through it alone. So my mom was like, I wish you would have told me sooner. And I'm like, Mom, I'm 16. Like, this is as soon as, like, you know, like,
pretty young to come out. 16 is your age.
Yeah, I was a junior in high school. And, like, I mean, like, I grew up, like, loving, like, pop music. Like, Britney Spears was, like, my number one idol. Like, even before I came out, I was in musical theater. I hung out with mostly girls. Like, so it wasn't completely a surprise to my parents. You know, I had really weird sense of fashion and hairstyles all the time. Like, I idolized, like, you know, icons, like I said, like Britney and like Madonna and Gaga and Beyonce.
When you were coming out with Britney, was Britney's CD Baby One More Time the first CD you heard when you were coming out, like that CD where she's standing? Trust me, because I'm all about Britney. I'm a slave for you. Britney is my Britney.
Oh my God,
that is when I thought I wanted to be a backup dancer for her, and I was gonna live the rest of my life just with a serpent around my neck, like coming. Like that is, I'm a Slave for You, Britney is like iconic. When I felt like that's it, I know I'm gay.
An icon, yeah.
Like I know it.
And
like
she
I
will live on forever to be an icon. Like she doesn't even have to put out any more music.
She does not.
She's just already cemented herself in pop history. But it was interesting because when I she first came out. Baby One More Time, I was 7 years old. I wasn't too much into music, but I remember in Uruguay not knowing any English and seeing the Baby One More Time video and seeing her all over the place. Mm-hmm. I really got into her when she came out with the In The Zone City, the one that had Toxic.
In The Zone.
That was 2003. That was 2003, yeah. And I was already here in America, so I was seeing her more. And that's when I became like a fan. It was her fourth CD, but then I went back and like, you know, learned all about her before.
Oh no, I was like Baby One More Time, Britney. That was like Hit Me One More Time. That was I was working at Sears at a music store. That Sears. Can you just hear me? I was working at Sears in the music department, and the CD came out, and the people I started playing it over. And over. And the manager was like, you need to change that CD and put something else. And I'm like, why?
It's so iconic.
I told them, why would I do that? This CD is the bomb. That and NSYNC, like, those were like my two iconic CDs, like Hit Me Baby One More Time and NSYNC No Strings Attached. That was like,
yes.
No strings attached. Those were like, and I'm, and then, and it's so funny that I can say right now that I'm dating myself, but I'm proud of being 40. I don't care. I'm like, I never wanted to be those queens that would like change my age. I'm like, no, I'm 40. And
yeah, you know,
it took me to get here a lot.
Exactly.
So I'm glad that I'm here at 40 years old. So, but you know, so your parents were cool. They were very supportive.
Yeah.
It was awesome. And
it was just kind of like, you know, they just accepted it. And now, like, they're, I think, more involved in, and I have a bit about this in my comedy. Like, they're more involved in, like, activism than I am. Like, you know, like, and I really should be more involved. But they're, you know, they're at the pride parades. They're at march.
So
it needs to be. Yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah, so it was. I had a very lucky experience,
and that's what you just touched upon, that you had. It was very. My experience was not that. My experience was, I'm Colombian. My mother was super Catholic. My parents were, and my mom just couldn't. And I came out really late. I came out like when I was like 19. Not that I hadn't pulled the right guys, but I hadn't really come out. And I came out, because my brother heard me talking on the phone with a guy, because we had a phone line. I didn't even have a cell phone. I had a phone line. So I was up at 2 in the morning talking to some guy on the phone, and he picked up the other line and heard the whole conversation.
Oh, fuck. So you were forced.
He called me the next day crying. And I'm looking at him like, why are you crying? And he's like, I know you're gay. I heard you talking to a guy on the phone. You should have told me. And I was like, Tierra traga me. For anybody that doesn't understand that, is I hope the earth swallows me right now. Tierra traga me. Because I didn't know what to do with that. And my mom walked in while he was crying. Mind you, my brother never cried. And she's like, what's going on here? And at that moment, my brother looked at me like, and he started shaking his head like, don't do it. Don't tell her. And I said, I can't live this lie anymore. I'm suffocating lying to them about who I really am. And I know that this is who I am already. I know that. So I said, and in Spanish, it's so hard to tell your parents in Spanish that you're gay, because the word is such a harsh word. Because my mom would understand, mommy, I'm gay. Because she's like, what the fuck? What is that? And I was like, I had to be like saying like homosexual. And that word is such a harsh word in Spanish. And my brother's like,
it's so long.
And it's so long that it feels like I was saying it forever.
Yeah,
and I'm like, mommy, siéntate. Yo soy homosexual. And I was like, when I said it, I almost felt like throwing up.
What was her first reaction?
She threw herself on the floor and started going, why?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, my brother's like, I told you not to tell her. And I was like, I had to. And it was a long road, a long, painful road of therapy. She wanted me to go through the priest at our church. She told them. It was like she didn't accept it. She cried all the time. She said that I was making a mistake, that I was going to go to hell, that I was going to burn in hell. It was that type of Catholic guilt. And at that moment, I kind of had to turn my back on the church and say, like, I can't
live. Yeah.
I can't live in this. I have a strong faith in God. And at that moment, it was like I was turning my back on God. And I felt like I'm alone. I don't have no one. And it was
organized religion is so traumatizing. Religion is just... It's such a weapon.
It is, and it's to divide. And then I learned that, and my faith withered for a little bit until I was able to be like, no, you know what? God still loves me. Just because I'm gay doesn't mean I'm gonna burn in hell. And so, it took my mom 10 years of like crying, and accepting, and her going to therapy herself. She went to therapy because I told her. Like, I'm like, listen, and he told her, like, hey, he's gay. He's sure that he's gay. The person that has the issue is you, not him.
Wow.
And so she had to stay in therapy for another year or two and it still was hard, her meeting my boyfriend. And I just told her, listen, you have to understand that you have to understand my life. So I cannot not put my life in your face, even though you feel like to some degree it's disrespectful. It isn't. I'm just trying for you to understand that this is my life. Like, this is not a phase. This is my partner. This is my boyfriend. And I wasn't like bringing like 20 million guys in front of her. I was like really only bringing people that I like was. And if you talk to her, all these years, she's only met like 4 guys.
Wow.
I mean, you, us as gay men, we can go through relationships in 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Like we speed date with guys. Like, so I would never bring any guy in my, like, some guys would be like, why can't I meet your mom? And I was like, because I'm not ready. Because this is going to be in my life, and I'm going to introduce my mom to you. It's already hard for her to meet men in my life. You need to be somebody that's there. That's going to be for real. So it was very traumatic. And but I learned so much, grew so much from that experience. That's the reason why I feel like we need to have representation. That's the reason why I feel like there should be gay, male, Hispanic comedians out there, because we don't have I never have somebody to look up to in my community.
No, yeah, I agree.
I never had that. I never had somebody that I can say, oh, I want to be just like him. I never have, and I feel like we should.
Or to normalize it, to normalize it, and you know.
I mean, think about it. Who do you look up to now as one somebody in media that's like a gay male comedian that you can say this is somebody that I want that has made it as a gay male comedian?
Honestly, no. I mean, like Wanda Sykes, but she's a woman, you know.
A woman.
But that's why I look up to women more, like straight women in comedy. If you ask me my favorite comedians, I'm gonna give you a list of women. Like, I don't relate to mostly any material from a straight male comedian, especially a straight white male comedian. I'm just not gonna relate or tune in for too long. I'll laugh, you know. I'm sure I'll find the material funny, but it's not going to resonate with me and inspire me to anything. But if I watch a woman and talk about, you know, her struggles as a woman in comedy and make it into a funny bit, that will resonate with me, and I will, you know, cherish that and keep that, you know. So
we need to be that. We need to be that face. We need, there's some young kid that's gonna come into this world and he's gonna want to be a comedian. And he's gonna have to have somebody that has paved the way. And I want to be that person. Because I don't know. Somebody told me, like, if you don't see it, then be it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that that's where
presentation.
I looked up to you when I first saw you perform in Finland, because I was like, oh my God, he's somebody that is actually doing this as a gay male Hispanic comedian. So when I saw you perform, I was like, you see, now I have somebody that has already started this wave, and I can see that this is possible. And so, because I grew up in very like blue collar director. My mom wanted me to make something of my life, and like it was never artistic. And so I always had to be a director or a manager. I always had to make money and live in a nice house and all these like preconceived notions of how I was supposed to live like as a gay man, because that means that my mom would accept me. So I was like, and so it was never being an artist. It was always being this executive with a high paying job with this position. And I did achieve that. I was very lucky to grow up in the hospitality, and I became a director in a hotel, and I was making money, and my mom was super proud of me. And then I was dying inside.
Because you hated it,
Because I hated it. Because I feel like, you know, that movie where like this little kid says, like, I want to dance, mom. I just want to dance.
Yeah. when you said you looked up at me, I thought it was because I'm taller than you.
That's another reason why I looked up at you. And you guys were so to me when I first went up there, when I did that open mic. You guys like really included me in your show. You're like, oh shit, this is another gay male comedian.
Yeah, anytime somebody comes and it's queer, we all like, because open mics, you always get the same, you know, the same type of people that come through. But when someone is different and is queer, we all like immediately like turn on the antennas and like watch, and like we actually, not that we don't pay attention to the other comics, but you know, I'm like, oh, I'm interested in this person, let me see what they have. And then you turned out to be really good, and I was like, oh. And then it was me, Tarek, Santi, Poppy, like we all literally talked about you. We're like, did you see there's a new queer comic, like he came through, and like immediately we're like, let's book him, let's get him involved, because we need people like you and me. We need, it's like you said, we need to be that representation, and the more there are of us, the more it becomes normalized. And in the future, it won't be like you're a gay Hispanic comic, you'll just be a comic, you know. And then kids growing up will watch people like us and just know that it's normal for them to pursue a career in this crazy industry, you know.
And another thing I want to say about Villain to everybody, it's such an inclusive, loving stage, because I worked in other places like the Improv. I've done open mics at the Improv. I perform at the Improv. I perform in other areas, in other bars, in other open mics. And honestly, I felt more supported in the Villain stage, and I feel like that's where I want my home to be as a comedian. I always want to relate back. My roots started at the Villain because it's where I felt most comfortable, because stages are rough. Wherever you go, you gotta go deal with those other stages where people are just like crickets sometimes.
I've seen it too. I perform outside of Villain sometimes, and it makes me thankful to have Villain. You know, I've been to venues where the person before me was just making 5 minutes worth of homophobic and transphobic jokes or misogynistic, and you just have to sit through it and just kind of like take it. And then you get on stage and like you do your own bit, and then people are like, he's not funny because he's not making fun of trans people or like queer people, you know. It's just like, it makes me thankful of having a space like Villain to nurture that, you know, my talent.
And we should have that. We should have a place that nurtures us. And I felt Villain, so I'm super excited that I never experienced improv, but I'm gonna. I know. So tomorrow I'm actually gonna start with that improv class that you guys are doing, which is I'm excited about. So
it's gonna be so much fun.
I never really dwelled into that improv environment. I always felt like as a comedian, I felt like I have a stage, I have my jokes, I have my bit, I have my set. But improv is very inclusive, because it's a very like back and forth communication with someone else.
Exactly. And it's gonna help your stand up. You'll see that it's gonna because you'll be able to learn how to improvise and how to deal with whatever, you know, the scene throws at you. And it's the same in stand-up. We got to be able to improvise, and we have, you know, if somebody's heckling your show, you can't just ignore it. You have to acknowledge it in a way that you take control. And improv does that. Improv helps you take control and stay in control. Yeah, so I think you're really gonna like that.
No, and I think it's gonna improve anything that improves my comedy, because I mean, I graduated, I have like a degree, and I'm like, and everybody's like, go get your master's, and I'm like, I won't go back to school to get my master's. What I'm gonna move forward to is I'm gonna improve my skills into learning about what I love, which is comedy, and which I want to be a comedian. This is
exactly
how I tell people I am a comedian, and then one time my friend's like, but why do you feel like you're lying? And I'm like, because I feel like I'm not at that place yet. And she's like, but you are a comedian,
right?
Comedian.
If like, you're doing it regularly, you are a comedian. Yeah.
So, and just with this podcast, it's been a great adventure just to like be able to like riff and talk and laugh and bring out, you know, things out into the world and have people listen to like my point of view, because at the end of the day, I'm just gay, and that's always been, I always dreamed about that my first comedy special on Netflix was going to be called I'm Just Gay. So that's period. So like now that I'm doing this podcasting and it's called I'm Just Gay, I feel like I'm on my way to that comedy special, and that is gonna
that's
happen.
Your brand.
That's my brand. My brand is I'm Just Gay. And so I'm super excited to even have people and introduce people like you that are such great comics, and that people should come and watch, and somebody to watch out for that's really out there putting himself out there, you know, even openly, even about your life, which is not easy sometimes when you're on that stage. You know, it can be intimidating.
Right.
You know, I really value about it. So, I'm glad that you came to visit us. You plug whatever you want to plug. Please let us know when you're performing. Tell us about your shows. So where you're always at Villain, what days, or where is it? How can we see Aldi perform? And not only on stage with comedy, but in other areas. Please let us know.
Yeah, of course. So my home room is Villain Theater. So I'm there usually most weekends, but even if I'm not, you still should check it out. We have shows Tuesdays. We have our open mics. Tonight, actually, we have a booked 420 special show, and then the open mic. And then we have shows Fridays and Saturdays as well. You can catch me personally this Saturday, April 24th. I'm actually going to be doing, I do also, aside from stand-up, I work on a show with Tarek Durgerman, Tonight with Tarek. It's a talk show. His sidekick. So if you've ever seen like Chelsea Handler, and she used to have Chewy, the little short Mexican guy, that's me.
Yes. Oh, that's awesome.
That's me in the show. We're going to be doing that. It's a live show. What's that?
Is that at the Villain?
Yeah, at Villain Theater at 8:30 p.m. So we have special guests. We do interviews. We play games. So it's literally like a late night talk show just on stage. And it's hosted by Tarek, one of my best friends. And yeah, that's going to be my next time there. And then at 10 p.m. we have a stand-up show as well. So yeah, we're always there. Check out villaintheater.com. Or if you want to follow me, it's Aldi like the supermarket. Very simple.
Because he's open.
And yeah.
And inclusive.
Because I'm open, accessible, cheap.
Accessible.
Exactly.
I'm so glad you came to visit us. I'm Just Gay with me, and that you. I really look up to you, and I look up to the way that you carry yourself as an artist. And I just wanted to have you come on our show and have, you know, just our listeners get to know you a little bit more. I always want to end the show with 6 questions, random questions, whatever questions you want to ask. Just a little insight. I have 3, you get 3, and then that's how. I really want to make sure that, you know, we finish the show all the time, just to kind of like just give it a little pop at the end, just like whatever comes up to you. I'll do my first 3. You do the next 3, and then, you know, we'll leave our audience with a little bit of knowledge about us, you know, while we're living this gay queer life that we're living as comedians. So, do you want to give me? You want to throw those questions at me? Let me have it.
Sure. Let's start with an easy one, okay?
All right, an easy one.
If you could open for any like big comic, like if any big comic in the world you could open for, mm-hmm. who would you choose to open for and why?
People are gonna kill me for this, and I know because when I tell people who one of my favorite comedians is, they have like a fit about it. But I know that this
don't
man,
say Amy Schumer.
No, it's not Amy Schumer. It's Louis C.K. No, it's not Amy Schumer. It's Louis C.K. Louis C.K.
Oh.
Yes, exactly. People cringe. People cringe when I say this, but
I just have to take a sip of water.
Exactly. And I will not say Louis C.K. because Louis C.K.'s comedy is brilliant. The way that he can turn morbid things into funny things, that's a gift. His way, there's a bit that he has about fucking a dead baby, and he is the only one that would have been able to make fucking a dead baby funny. And when he did that, I was like, I appreciate this man's way of the way he builds comedy. Which is why I appreciate his comedy, because he builds and he knows how to draft jokes. And I'm a very big person on writing comedy and the way that it's written. So that's why I mm-hmm. respect him as a writer. He's a really great comedic writer. He writes for a lot of people. Louis C.K. writes for everyone, actually. He's one of like the writers for everything. So he's one of the people that I know as a gay man, I shouldn't say that, but my truth is my truth. Louis C.K. is one of the people I would open up for.
Wow.
Exactly. Exactly. And people have...
Oh, it's cool. It's cool.
People have always been like, really?
Yeah. He's done things. Yeah, he's... I can respect some of his stuff, I guess.
Exactly.
Next question. Let's spice it up a little bit.
Ooh,
last time you had sex.
I don't know if it was sex. I went. He hit. I don't know if it was sex because it was like really bad, and I didn't. And it was like 3 days ago, and this guy had been hitting me up on what should I call it? On Scruff, and he's been hitting mm-hmm. me up. Colombian guy, and I was like, oh, you know, I went out of town and I couldn't hook up, and then finally he was like, oh, you're always playing around, you're never gonna come and see me, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, whatever, I'm not doing shit tonight. So like I literally was bored, and I was like, oh, let me go to this guy's house to see what he's all about, like 3 days ago. And it wasn't really sex, because like we started and he's like such a bad kisser that I can't. If you're a bad kisser, it just turns me off.
So, yeah, I agree with that.
It was such a like a and it was, you know, those people that kiss you and they swallow your whole face. And they're like slobbering all over you. That's how this man kissed, and I was like, I can't. And I literally like it turned into a board. He's like, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. So it wasn't sex, but it was the last time I kind of like was gonna have sex, but it didn't pan out. Like really,
but it didn't work out.
It didn't work out. I thought. I mean, he's cute. He was a cute guy, but I was just like, I don't care how cute you are. If you're a bad kisser, then next.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I can't. So that's my last encounter.
Now the last question. So being a comedian and being a comedian in like, you know, 2021 and the times that we live in, is there mm-hmm. anything that you won't joke about? And what is that?
I think I won't joke about transsexual, trans people. I just won't. My ex's best friend was trans and he was transitioning while I was with my ex, and I got to see the struggle that he went through internally to like, and like go through the surgery and put on and go get his breast done and the hormones and just the fact that it's just that transitioning in either way, either men to women, or it's an emotional, mental, it's just hard. And me seeing that struggle, I empathize with it. And I won't joke about
That's
it.
Good.
I don't think it's funny. I don't think it's funny to make fun of trans
people. Yeah.
I just don't think it's a funny thing. And I feel like the people should take this more seriously than sometimes how people want to joke about it. And I don't find it funny in any, maybe at one point, like it will be when we stop fighting for transsexual people's rights. Maybe we can make fun of this, but right now it's not a joking matter.
Sorry. Exactly. Now, while there are trans people getting murdered every day. Yeah.
Exactly. While people are killing themselves, people are just not, they're like, I mean, just the fact, if any of you listeners know a transsexual, and then you know their life, getting hormones, going to therapy, being looked at like you're wrong all the time.
Mm-hmm.
From every way, shape, or form, you're just wrong, and you're wrong for who?
Even in the gay community.
Yes, even in the gay community. Thank you. Yes, I won't joke about it. I just won't. It's not fun. So...
Like,
pass the test. Yes. after Louis C.K., then you're like, okay, he redeemed himself.
Yeah, exactly. I was giving you one last chance.
So, your turn. Let's see. So, what? I want to know what wakes you up in the morning. What makes you tick?
My alarm. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Honestly, fuck. I'm a very heavy sleeper too, so like it's hard for me to wake up. Like I'm like, ugh.
In the morning, actually.
Yeah, I guess like knowing that I have to work, my day job does not excite me. I work for a bank. I'm not gonna say the name.
Yeah,
no. For a very big bank, like very big bank.
Yeah.
So I like my days are filled with numbers and money and just a lot of that. And it's not the worst job ever, and it's a really good company to work for. So I guess what wakes me up is just making it through work and then get to do what I like. So it's kind of like I have to do 8 hours of real, quote unquote, real work, and then I get to go be on stage and be stupid and say whatever the fuck I want. So that gets me out, you know, like, okay, I have to do this for 8 hours, but then I get to go play, you know? So that's the motivation. Work, and then I get to play, literally work and play. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hey.
Hey, did I lose you for a little bit?
I think we did, yeah.
Oh, okay.
I said it was work and play.
Awesome. And we're still back. And so the next question is, what is the kinkiest thing you've ever done?
Oh, Lord.
And we're here.
Actually, like I'm super boring. Like I talk all this shit. No, literally, I talk all this shit, and I'm like the most boring, like vanilla person. But I think like when I was younger, when I was in like my early 20s, I got talked into fisting this twink that I was friends with. But I was with another friend of ours. He was an older friend of the two of us, and mm-hmm. we were all kind of drunk, and you know the it came up, and I was like, okay. But I put a condom around my hand, and then I just did it. I literally like I did not get any pleasure of it. I'm not kink shaming, you know, if you're into it, it's great. But I just did it as kind of like, it was amusing. I was like, oh my God, my fist is up some guy's asshole.
you're like, that would have been a part where I would have been like, take a picture. And I'm like, take a picture. This is interesting. This is like an...
I felt like a farmer. You know those farmers that like shove their hands in cows' asses?
No. Farmers that have to constipate the cows and they literally shoving their hand up some.
Literally.
To take the
that was me.
Four cows constipated. That's how I feel about fisting. I mean, again, I'm either king shaming either because I'm a freak. But just there's things that I don't understand and I just won't.
Yeah. And props to him, like, I could never have a fist up my ass. I can barely take dick, and I can't even imagine, like, a fist. Like, props to him for... He did it. Oh, no, I lost you again? Hello?
Hello? Did I lose you?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
No, we're back.
We're back. I don't know what's going on. Right. So, I'm like the same way. People have tried to fist me, and I'm like, nope, it's not going to work.
Yeah, no.
I will take some fingers, but I'll just be like, when they try to do like a five finger thing, I'm already like, I know where this is going, and I'm just letting you know that it's not going to happen. So, we're going to.
Yep, I agree.
Right there, sir. And they're like, oh, but you don't even know. No, I know. That I don't want it.
I agree. Yeah.
So that's. I mean, at least you're open. You know.
Yeah.
No pun intended. At least you're open.
But .
So, and then the last thing that I want to say is like, okay, besides Brittany, because I'm gonna preface this. Besides Brittany, because we already know you're Brittany, that you really love Brittany. What other artists in any genre do you admire?
Oh, I like that question. Mm-hmm. So many. I have like such weird like influences. I've always been like women. Women have always been at the front of everything. There are some male artists like I really, 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 really like Bruno Mars, and I think he's probably the best male artist right now. But then women, I love, love, love Rihanna. Rihanna's always been one of my number ones. Lady Gaga. But Gaga, until like I really got into her when she started to explore beyond pop, you know, like when she started doing like movies and like performing like musical theater style, you know, when she really started to show her talent. I got into her then. She's really theatrical and cool. And who else? I used to love, not so much now, but I do have to say she's been a big influence in like just writing. Lana Del Rey was like, but, you know, I kind of grew out of that one. But yeah, just women, always women. You know, you can name the girl. I've probably gone through a phase. I've gone through a Katy Perry phase. I love, and this is my Louis C.K., but it's not as bad. I love Taylor Swift. Taylor Swift is. Don't even, bitch. I love Taylor Swift. Like, I. Hey, she's not nearly as problematic as Louis C.K.
She isn't.
And I know she gets a lot of shit, but she is literally probably one of my like top five influences. And just, I love her. I just think she's such a brilliant songwriter, and people don't credit her enough. And people are like, she only writes about boys, and she doesn't. If you really delve into her discography and her writing, she writes about some really, really like touching things, I guess.
which is what you just said, that you appreciate the art, not maybe the person, but you can appreciate the fact that she's a brilliant songwriter, and just like songwriter, just like I appreciate Louis C.K. as a brilliant
I still love her as a person. I think she's a great person.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's really, really cool. I love her. I love her. I have nothing negative to say. But like again, like to me, it's hard for me to dislike women. Like yeah. I think like in pop music especially, like I said, I've even gone through a Katy Perry phase. Like
I was at to me, Azuka, like I was at Azuka the other day, which never I hadn't gone there in like 3 years, and there was this drag queen that she was doing Katy Perry, and I was like, I haven't seen a drag queen do Katy Perry ever. Like ever.
Oh wow.
And I was like, wow, like she's really into like she did a whole Katy Perry mashup and everything. And I was like, nice. Hey, okay, do it, boo boo. You're up in
put some respect.
You're up in this Katy Perry gig up in
here. Put some respect on my girl.
Respect on it. I think she is a
period.
Good songwriter, and she's, you know, Katy Perry herself. I think she's really a good songwriter as well.
She's fun. Like she's not going to change the world, but she's fun. Like, and people take pop music so serious. Like it's not there to save the world. It's just there for a good time. You know?
Come on, like Britney, it's pop. It's toxic. I mean, come on, you know what's that song with Britney, bitch? You better work, bitch. Come on.
Give me more.
Give me no. What's that thing? You want a Maserati? You want a Bugatti?
Oh, work, bitch.
I mean, come on now. That's not gonna change the world, but you better work, bitch. That's just it's fun, and I think that's what people forget sometimes. And maybe we'll end with this: that we shouldn't forget that the world is not so serious all the time, and that sometimes
exactly
you just better work, bitch. You better
exactly.
And with that, we're gonna end this podcast. Thank you so much, Aldi, for being with us, and I appreciate so much you taking the time to talk to us and being part of I'm Just Gaying and being part of like this this queer talk and being Latino and being here and being all about it. And thank you so much.
And thank you for having me. Good luck with the show, and anything you need, I'm here.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, take care. Thank you.
Thriller Miami. Hold on to your hats and see Miami from the comfort of your own speedboat. Beautiful Miami skylines and fun and exciting adventures. The Thrill of Miami, right at your fingertips. Use promo code HDC for $5 off your next ride.